Hey, so before we get started, I wanted to talk to you guys about Disney Plus. Now, I know by now you've probably heard about Disney Plus, the new streaming service that includes Disney, Pixar, Marvel, Star Wars, and National Geographic. With all these amazing brands in one place, Disney Plus has one of the most incredible libraries in the entire streaming landscape, and it's all ad-free. From classics like Snow White to today's blockbusters like Captain Marvel and Avengers Endgame, the content on Disney Plus is truly unparalleled. And if all that isn't enough, Disney Plus even has originals like The Mandalorian, the first live-action Star Wars series. So don't miss out. Go and sign up today and start streaming and tell them Hayes sent you. What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another episode of The Awakened Soul Podcast. I am one of your hosts, CEO Hayes, and in this week's episode, before we get into that, if you're not following the podcast, make sure you're doing so at Awakened Soul Pod or at The Awakened Soul Pod. Make sure you're also following me personally at CEO Hayes. That's CEO Haize. We got an amazing show planned for you guys this week. I will be talking about, we'll get into it. Because it's for those who have been following the EDP445 situation, who is a YouTuber who's been around for a while, is actually quite a big YouTuber. He had about 2.5 million subscribers. He actually got taken down by another page where they do predator poaching. And then, like, there's been a lot of drama to fall down out of that. So we'll talk a little bit about that just because I find this situation really, really interesting. And I wanted to talk about it. And then in the last segment, the main discussion topic, we'll actually be talking about gas. Not the type of gas you're talking about. We'll be talking about gear acquisition syndrome. Talk fast. Sometimes I stumble over my words. So that's what we have planned on this week's episode of The Awakened Soul. Thanks for all the support, all the emails about last week's episode. Really appreciate you guys. Like I've always said, and I keep saying, I'm going to keep saying it. The Awakened Soul has one of the best and most supportive listenerships in all of podcasting. And I appreciate that. I don't take it for granted. You guys mean the world to me. And so, yeah, that's all with that. Enough prefacing. We're going to go ahead. We're going to jump into my dark and twisted crazy ass mind. But before we do that, we have to get into our intro music, which starts right about now, and I'll catch you guys on the other side.
The following is a Breaks Media podcast.
You are now listening to the best podcast in the world, The Awakened Soul, hosted by my dad.
All right, what's going on, everyone? So I said that during the opening what we'll be talking about in this week's In the Mind of Hayes segment. And so, again, just to set the stage. So EDP445 is a YouTuber, quite a large one. He got taken down by this another channel called Predator Poaching, run by a guy named Chet Goldstein. That was his a fake name. His name is actually Alex Rosen. And so the reason why I want to talk about this, for one, is that, you know, I'm a parent, right? And so I've said before many, many times how, you know, anything to do with pedophiles, it's always going to be something that elicits an immediate response and vitriol from me. I can't help it. That's just where I am. And so initially when the news came out that EDP445, which EDP stands for Eat That Pussy 445. Right there should have been some signs. I was going to do and report on it in the episode that followed. I think this was about 2 or 3 weeks ago at this point. I was going to talk about it, but I didn't. At that time, there was still more details out going out about it. And, you know, I know we live in an age where a lot of our kids watch YouTube. And I don't know how closely everyone monitors their kids' YouTube consumption or what they watch on YouTube or anything like that. This isn't to pass judgment or to talk about that necessarily, because I think, you know, his content it's not like his content was geared towards kids. So that's what I wanted to say. But with being as popular as that he was, I'm sure that he probably popped up in some of the algorithms. And so It's important that we watch and look at what our kids are looking at and consuming for things like this. Now, his content, like I said, was not geared towards kids, but the fact that this guy was so big, and just to walk down what happened here is that this channel, Predator Approachers, they reached out to him through a fake page. They initially made the first contact. He responded. Chats and logs came out. Eventually, it went to him supposedly meeting up with this girl where they had their cameras, their crew, and they busted him. Now, again, unfortunately, it doesn't look like any charges are going to be placed against him because of the way that they did the investigation, the fact that they weren't professionals. They tried to do this whole, like, To Catch a Predator type investigation. And even with To Catch a Predator, which was ran by, was it NBC? I believe it was NBC. That's wrong. It's been so long since I've watched To Catch a Predator. I don't remember exactly which network aired it. But so they did this whole style investigation. And unfortunately, it doesn't look like, I said, he's going to face any charges because of the way that it was done. The police weren't involved with it. Even when To Catch a Predator did some of their investigations, which is something I didn't know about at the time, is that a few, I can't remember the percentage, I think it was about 40% of even the people that they busted didn't face criminal prosecution because they were amateurs and unprofessional. They had police and law enforcement involved in some of these things. So when you have someone who's going out and, you know, just being a YouTuber and trying to do this whole thing, it unfortunately leaves some gray area legally where he may not be able to get charges pressed against him. Now, I'm going to shout out to Dan because I would love to hear, like, Black Law and Legal Lies talk about this and hear some of Ann's expertise in law and just, but I think Dan's like me. I think this topic may piss Dan the fuck off as well. But nonetheless, outside of me wanting to hear some of my favorite YouTubers talk about, I mean, podcasters talk about this, is that, you know, this guy, and he's been accused times before. There were, I think, like 3 or 4 different allegations against him that he either played off as he knew he was being trolled, so he played along or whatever else. And people kind of ignored it. He went back to YouTubing and there was no problem. I think what makes this time different is that even and we'll talk about some of the issues with Alex Rosen, who ran this investigation. And I, for people who aren't watching the video, I did air quotes with that because we'll talk about that. But that when they got him on video, he admitted saying that he was lonely. At first he said that he was there to get a cupcake. It was going to be nothing sexual. But then after they brought up the chat logs, he admitted to saying these things, their own video. His YouTube channel has been completely taken down and banned, both of them, because he had to. I believe his Twitter has been taken down as well. He initially removed a lot of his videos from YouTube. I'm guessing because he probably thought that it was going to kind of blow over and he was going to be able to come back. But now he's been banned from YouTube. And, you know, he said that he does this thing because he's lonely. And when you look at EDP-445, he's almost the definition of an incel. And he used this comedy, his page to get some of the darker shit out. But it's always been there. There's always been an underline. I don't mean to be one of those people who sits here with hindsight now and says, oh, well, we should have known. I'm not saying that we should have just guessed that it was to this level, that he was a abuser and a sexual deviant to this level on our own. But when you look at the allegations that have been placed on him over the last few years, that he was able to just brush under the rug because no one really pressed him on it or held him accountable for the accusations that faced against him. It kind of, for me, and this is what I'll say, me, and I was not subscribed to EDP-445. I've seen some of his videos. He does a lot of sports things, a lot of reactions and goofy things, and they've popped up, and I'm not going to lie that I've watched some of the videos. But like that leads me to this place in this conversation is that when we're looking at these creators, when we're watching them, when we're whatever, consuming their content and allegations like that come along and then we allow them to brush it off. And when I say we, I don't mean me specifically, you specifically, I mean, as viewers on YouTube, that people who watch YouTube videos, and you know, there's been other one, what the beauty YouTuber James Charles, as I think's his name. I don't watch beauty YouTube channel, so that name may be incorrect. He's also faced some allegations and released a video of him admitting to some things. But what place do as content consumers have in calling out the bullshit? That's where this question kind of sits. And to highlight that more so, EDP-445, disgusting, deviant, don't defend any of that at all. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like he's going to press any criminal charges. But the thing that I think we I don't know if I want to say take solace in, is that his life is going to be completely changed from this at all. I'm not sure 100% if he was making his living totally off YouTube. I would imagine with the number of subscribers he does and the rate that he was releasing videos and those views, probably a big part of his income was coming from YouTube. So that part of his life is going to be changed forever. Then the public stigma now that he's on camera, and even though that the Predator Approaches page has been taken down as well, and we'll talk about that, has been taken down also, but that video was going to live on the internet forever. It's been news, CNN, I think, reported on it. It's been a lot of news channels who have picked up the story and reported on it. And I think the reason why is because the consuming and watching content on YouTube is such a big part now of American or worldwide culture at this point, that this is a cautionary tale, right? This is a cautionary tale for us to watch who we're supporting, watch who we're putting our time in. And also for those people who do just kind of give their kids a screen and let them go on it, is that now hopefully a lot of those people are kind of waking up, even though, like I said, EDP's channel was not necessarily a channel directed towards kids at all. The content wasn't directed towards that, but hopefully this wakes some people up. Now, the other side of this, the flip side of this that I want to talk about is Chet Goldstein, aka Alex Rosen, and the Predator Approachers, who the whole time that this video was supposed to be coming out, and they released a teaser first, then they wanted to make sure that they were going to be monetized enough before they dropped the video, all seemed creepy, right? Like that seemed a little bit off. If you have something and you have this video of this guy who was going to victimize a child, for you to specifically wait to be monetized before you released it seemed a bit, it raised some eyebrows, right? I would say that it raised some eyebrows. And so, because you would think once this video drops, it's going to be so huge that you're going to get monetized anyway. But nonetheless, they wanted to make sure they waited till they were monetized. So this video drops, and then about a week after this video drops, if even that, we start getting some details about Alex Rosen, aka Chet Goldstein, who ran this. Well, the way that they ran this investigation started getting broke down when people started realizing that EDP 445 was probably not going to face charges. After that, we start getting things and other videos that come out from this guy, Alex Rosen, who he's not only a racist. There's several videos of him saying the N-word directed towards black people. There's several videos of him making homophobic statements. And I believe he himself is a homosexual male. He identifies as that, I believe. Now, I read that, but I haven't got that solidified. So that's just me putting it out there in case that is true. Again, not that it matters or changes anything here, but he's been on video seen making homophobic statements. And then this video comes out that makes him seem just as much of a predator as EDP 445. While he wasn't meeting up to have sex, but he's on this video having this conversation with this real 13-year-old girl and telling her, coaching her to take pictures more sexy, coaching her to take certain clothes off, taking her, coaching her to talk more seductively and do these things, which could be looked at as grooming. And he's recording this the whole time like it's funny. And so now his page has also been taken down. He's been blocked and banned from YouTube. And so this whole story and the whole way that this thing unfolded is just a hugely big cautionary tale on watch who the fuck you're watching on YouTube, right? And, you know, Chet Goldstein in some of his other Predator Approaching videos, he's been said to basically proven to basically say, well, if you fight me, then we won't call the police. Like, coaching people into physical altercations to avoid them calling the police. Like, overall, this dude is just as much of a creep on so many different levels as EDP 445. And so the whole way that this story has just unfolded, as someone who creates content, as someone who, I'm not a reporter, but who talks about stories and stuff, this is just such a clusterfuck, to put it honestly and bluntly. It's just like to the person who exposed a predator, not only to have videos that they recorded themselves of doing predatory things, but also being racist and homophobic. It's just like, this is like such a, it's like a Law and Order story. This is like a real life story that you would see on some, or not real life, but this is like a real life episode that you would see on Law and Order SVU. And I guarantee you, we know SVU rip shits from the headlines. This season's probably already all done recorded, but I guarantee you next season of SVU, we're going to get a version of this story on SVU because it's just, it's ripe for that. This is mind-boggling. And so I know this isn't my usual things that I cover in the In the Mind of Hayes segment, but it's just, it's wow. Like, it's just wow. And as I'm sitting here just watching this unfold and the different layers that come out, and you've had videos come out about EDP that exposed EDP and some of his past predatory things, then this Chet Goldstein guy, and more things come out about him, and like I said, the racist comments and the making people fight and like all this shit. Obviously, so this guy Chet Goldstein absolutely, and I don't like using this phrase because it's starting to become cliche, did all this for clout, right? This was a clout maneuver to do this. And you know, it is what it is there. But then that his shit is so fucked up as well that now he's taken down himself by trying to take down a predator. It's just fucking crazy. Like I said, all the videos is on there. You can search it. Like the video of him, of Chet Goldstein, the video of EDP is disgusting as well. I said that. I want to make sure I say this so nobody thinks I'm trying to defend it. But the video of Chet Goldstein being on the phone with this actual 13-year-old girl, telling her to take off pieces of clothing and to take more seductive photos and to, you know, just like I said, grooming and coaching is fucking equally as disgusting as anything else in this story. But let me know how you guys feel about it, what you guys think, if you were following it, if you knew about it, if it's something that even came up on your radar or on your social media. I'd love to hear about it. Just let me know. But we are going to go ahead. We're going to go ahead and take a break, a brief break. We're going to play some intro music. And then on the other side of that, we're going to jump into the main discussion topic where we'll be talking about gear acquisition syndrome. I said it right that time, aka gas. I'll catch you guys on the other side of this.
Being a mom is probably the most rewarding thing that I've ever done. I have my own company, but I'm a mom first.
A young urban mom, it's not an experience like any other. When you're young, you're growing with your kid. You're growing into that identity.
Developing and creating a community of moms that are basically sharing information with one another so that we can be stronger moms.
Perfect imperfection, beautiful chaos, doing the best you can every day. Falling down 9 times, but getting up 10. As long as you are led by love, you kind of can't lose.
Moms coming together to share information so that we can be great parents for our children.
Us being the change we wanted to see in the world. Yum came into existence.
All right. So we're in the main discussion topic this week, and this is a topic that is really like near and dear to my heart, because I talk about my equipment all the time. I talk about how much money has gone into my studio, my cameras, all that shit. And it's something that, you know, as creatives, I think we fall in this, and not everyone, because some creatives are literally, they buy their initial set of gear and they will ride that out into something breaks or doesn't work anymore, right? So, but gear acquisition syndrome, especially in the creative culture, is something that, you know, is real. Gear acquisition syndrome is something that's very, very real, because how often do you have, and you know, the people, and this isn't to throw anyone under the bus, right? Because I'm going to mention myself in this as well. I think some of the podcasters that come to mind when I think of gear acquisition syndrome, me, Dan on Drugs, Flaw 700. And again, that's not I'm not saying that to throw anybody under the bus. That's why I made sure I said my name first, because I think I'm worse than either one of those two. But when you're in this creative space, you start, you know, when you initially get in it, it's this fun thing or whatever, and you're doing it. And then it's like, oh, but that's a better mic. Oh, but that's a better light. And it's even worse if you get into video. Like my people who are podcasters and YouTubers who are video creatives, I had to make the decision, right, to not buy another camera because they're like, cameras are coming out at such fast pace now. Like when I bought my camera, it was a 6K camera. There was no other 6K cameras really on the market. And then now 8K cameras are becoming the rage, and it's like, whoa, hold on. I don't even use the 6K on my camera usually. But I think we are, when we're creating, right, we look for gear initially that's going to make us either sound look the best possible. And then there's this constant thing of improvement. And as technology grows at such a rapid pace, we can never stay ahead of it. There will literally always be something that's better than what you had before that does or adds a new level of functionality. For example, I had this Focusrite, 18i8, one great Focusrite that had four mic inputs or whatever. The Rodecaster Pro came out with that has still four mic inputs, but has the additional soundboard built in. And I had to have it, even though my interface at that time was working perfectly fine. And I even have I worked out a software ability to have a soundboard. I did not need this Rodecaster Pro when I come back and look at it. Now, yes, it does make a lot of things easier. It does simplify my process. I wasn't doing video at the time, but it even helps more so with video now because I'm able to have my good mic go.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Directly into my camera and get great audio that way. But we are constantly looking for equipment to improve our creativity or improve the quality. And the reason why gear acquisition syndrome is something that it's not necessarily bad, but more than likely it is, and some people are able to manage it a little bit better, is because, like I said, we can never stay ahead of it. And a lot of times we have gear that's more than capable enough to get what we want out of it if we learn it a little bit more. I can't stress enough how, like I said, I talk about it a lot on this podcast. I talk about the fact of how I have an actual cinema camera. It's used to make movies. That's why my videos look so good, XYZ. There are times where I force myself to use my old camera, and there's actually, this isn't a shameless plug, but I'm going to admit it. I'm going to be doing one of the what's in my camera bag videos and just talking about like my camera setup on the Legacy Visions YouTube channel, where I'm going to be doing a little bit more of like the video creation side of tips and tutorials over there. If you are interested in that, if not, it's absolutely fine. And when I was doing this, I had to use my old camera. I forced myself to use my old camera so I could have my new camera in frame because I'm talking about it, so I can have it in hand. And I'm looking at this thing, and now that I've learned different things with video, since I'm doing video more professionally now and as a side gig, things that I've learned, I'm now applying into my older camera, my first camera, and I'm like, damn, this video looks amazing. Like, this looks damn near as good as my professional camera. And it's like, did I really need to spend the additional freaking $4,000 on a cinema camera when I had a perfectly good $900 camera that does probably about 85 to 90% of what my cinema camera does? But I like I said, and this is something that I wanted to talk about because I suffer from it. I just got a drone, right? Just got a drone. Now, that's a little bit different because that does something that I couldn't do with any of my current equipment. But when I look at, like, specifically, over the last 2 years, I've easily spent upwards of $10,000 on equipment. Easily. That's probably undercutting it some, if I'm being honest. But I think this, where stuff becomes special for me as a creative is not necessarily the gear in of itself, but the quality of the content. And we think that buying and purchasing this gear is going to necessarily improve it. And usually buying more gear, throwing new gear at something, unless it's an absolute need. For example, if you need an LED light that does 15 colors and all you have is one LED light that only does white, that's different. You're buying that because it absolutely does a functionality that you could not get before. But when we look at it and thinking that gear just automatically improves quality, it doesn't. It doesn't. And I know there's this whole thing on YouTube of gear doesn't matter. I don't say that. I don't think that enough, right? I don't think that gear doesn't matter at all. It is how you use the gear, But also, some gear does add some things that you just can't do. For example, I was looking for another camera for my wedding work, and I wanted a camera that had better autofocus than what my camera does. My camera, again, for those who don't know, most cinema cameras that are used for movies don't have autofocus at all, because the director, they have what's called a focus puller. It's somebody who literally sits with a monitor and a device that changes the focus of the camera, who knows what they're doing, as the director more so just focus and the cinematographer focus on the framing and the camera movements and the cinematography. And so mine doesn't have great autofocus. If you notice, sometimes in my videos, it'll drift a little bit, but it usually comes back to me pretty quick because I've tweaked the settings. So I was looking for another camera, a camera that I wanted to use on my gimbal for different angles while I had my main camera focused in on the bride or the groom or whatever. And my mind initially went to this Sony camera, which was another $4,000. And I was like, which has different lenses than my camera. So I would have had to invest in a different lens system. And for the longest, that's what I was going to spend. Finally, I had to make the decision to know, I'm just going to get another camera that's very similar to my cinema camera, that's made by my used Lumix cameras, that is another Lumix camera that has the same mount. I can use the same lenses. They're interchangeable. But I'm going to make myself learn how to better use the focusing with that. So whether so that's something that I did. But to bring it back to podcasting specifically, I think with podcasting, there's this idea that it's always the hunt for the next great mic. I did it. The mic that you see in my videos that I use now, the EVRE320 is the name of the mic that I use. Great mic. Great mic. For the longest, I was using a Behringer XM8500. Also a great mic. I use that for the majority of the time that this podcast has been around. That's the podcast I listen to. So if you go back and listen to episodes older than a year and a half, most of those episodes were done on this Behringer mic that was $25 and sounds amazing. At the time, I didn't learn how to EQ. I didn't learn equalization settings. I didn't learn some of the filter settings to get the best out of that mic, but it still sounded great. Now I spent another $200 on this microphone. But I don't have to EQ it as much. I don't have to. It sounds amazing. But I could have easily gotten very close to the sound quality, if not equal to the sound quality, by just learning the mic that I had at the time different. Now, since I've taken now time out to learn EQ, if for some reason this mic goes out, I'm not buying another one of these. I'm going to go back to that old mic and make that motherfucker sound amazing. And so when we look at like gear being automatically what's going to change or make our product better, I think that's where the syndrome and that's where the negativity comes out in. Because for most of podcast content listeners or content consumers in general, whether it be visual, whether it be audio, it's the content that comes first. If you have your content locked down, if you have a great way of delivering, if you are entertaining, if you've picked a topic that you're passionate about and they feel that and your audience feels connected to you, yeah, that doesn't mean that won't excuse giving them sucky sound quality or sucky quality content. But if your quality is good enough and your content is amazing and draws them in, I guarantee you there's very rare a podcast listener is thinking, they should go buy this $500 mic. People just like podcast consumers, content consumers don't care. They don't think about that unless they're another content consumer. And this is where I say that we get into this echo chamber as creatives, where we are only talking to other creators and we start thinking that it's about, because so many conversations, what camera do you use? What monitor do you use? What mic are you using? What interface are you using? That we think that. And then we're also like, did you know that the Rode's coming out with the Rodecaster Pro 2 and all this type of stuff? And we start, like I said, thinking that that upgrade is going to be something that we need because we're talking to just other podcasters, where the people who can consume our content are absolutely fine with the quality of what you do. A lot of the money that I have spent, and I try to make this about me. Now, the majority of that has been to build this studio in my basement, which I think is a necessity to have the studio in my basement. I just do for what I do and a lot of different things, and having more guests in the studio soon now that, more people are getting vaccinated. But when I look at, like, for example, I bought this Atomos recorder, right? And that does do a lot for my business side of video and my filmmaking side of video. That is a tool that I feel was needed. Now, had I done more research, I would have jumped into that first, because I have three other monitors around here that combined are
probably more than the price of the Atomos, but because I didn't do enough research. I bought the first one. I bought it. I needed an external monitor. And I'm new to this. I didn't take the time out to research. And I think the things are, first, if we're going to look at like actionable items coming from this topic, first, rather than new gear, look at how you can learn your gear. Look if there's anything, ask yourself, are you getting the best possible quality out of what you currently own? And sometimes that may mean learning something that you haven't taken the time out to learn. Like I said, EQing microphones and voices and audio can get you so far with almost whatever mic that you have rather than buying a new one. So that's the first actionable item. Ask yourself, are you truly getting the best out of the gear that you currently have? Number two, how much easier is the gear that you're purchasing making your job? If it's cutting out a lot of time, and time is money, if it's cutting out a lot of time for you, if it's streamlining your process to the point where you've been spending so much time on this that it's taken away from you being able to create, all right, then maybe that's probably a good purchase because that allows you to focus back on creating even more so. And then number three, are you doing it because of the perception of just because it's something new so you can have the latest and greatest? Or are you truly doing it because it fills a gap in what you need, right? If you ask yourself those questions, if you look at those three things, then two out of three or one out of three, just depending on it, then chances are, okay, then that piece of gear is worth the investment. And I can't stress enough too, like the one of the worst things that fall into a lot of creatives when it comes to gear acquisition syndrome is how much more do you have to create or how many hours or episodes for you that you have to put out to eat that cost of that new gear. And for some people, you can't answer that because a lot of us creatives aren't making money off creating. Now, luckily, I am a creative that does make money off his podcast. My YouTube isn't nearly monetized yet, but I am a content creator for other brands. I do weddings, I do film, so I do make money off these things. So a lot of, even if it's not necessarily my content, the content that I create does have a monetary value to my life. So it balances out sometimes with the gear that I buy. Sometimes I have to eat the cost. Sometimes I can say, all right, once I do these two weddings, I can go buy this new piece of gear. That's what I did with the camera. I had a wedding. I knew I needed a second B camera. And I was like, all right, after I do this wedding, that's going to cover the cost of not only my time, but this new piece of gear that I need to use. But if you're a content creator that's not yet making money, don't always think that you need to go to the mics, the Shure SM7Bs, the EVRE 20s or 320s like I use. Don't think you need to do that. And for video, this is the thing that I can't stress enough. And this is where I think, for me, the video component is so much more expensive than just the audio component of podcasting. So this isn't to shun my podcasters only, but as people are doing more video, you will find video is way more expensive than podcasting because the cost of the camera body is, even if you want a decent camera, professional camera, and we'll talk, I have another thing that I want to talk about with video here that we'll end on, but if you want to invest in professional video equipment, you have to look at the camera body, you have to look at the lens. Lenses sometimes are almost as expensive as the camera themselves. You have to look at storage, because a lot of these cameras, if you get into like a 6K camera with mine, the SD or QHD cards that you use are so fucking astronomical, it can be ridiculous. So if you're not making money off your creation, don't keep investing in something that's not investing back into you. And by that, I mean, you keep spending money on gear, but there's no money coming in from the gear that you're spending money on. So what sense does it make to buy, in my example, like people ask me what camera I use, what sense does it make for somebody who's not doing this professionally, not making money off creating, to go and jump right into a $4,000 camera? I would never suggest that to anyone. I would never suggest that to anyone. And like I said, that cost of the camera is just the camera. You can't even film with just the camera. The camera, my main camera and lens setup is $6,500. That's how much everything costs. That's it. And that's not even counting, like I said, the SD cards and storage and media and everything else that goes into needing to just run a video operation. So if you're not making money off this, keep your investment as low as possible while maintaining the quality that you need and want. Like I said, there is a great mic that you can get for $25 that is going to sound amazing. It's XLR. Now, you have to get an interface for that, too. There are cheap interfaces. The Behringer Euphoria interfaces are some of the best affordable interfaces that you can get. You're up and running for about $75, $80 if you're an audio-only podcast that you can get very professional sound out of, and you'll get studio-quality sound. Secondly, the video aspect of it. If you want to get into this video thing, I can't stress enough, shout out to Socially Unacceptable, my little brothers over there, who they have dived heavily into video production. But the thing, and I don't think they'll mind people knowing this. Corey, if you're listening, my bad if I spilled some beans that you didn't want to spill. But they use iPhones for theirs, and their video looks fucking amazing. Amazing. The best camera that you have is the camera that you already own, especially when you're starting off. If you don't know how to edit video yet, you haven't gotten into color grading, you haven't gotten into any of that stuff, transitions, like, and you're learning it, the best place to start is on your phone. Most of the modern phones, if you've had a phone that's come out within the last 3 years, it can record in 4K. I don't think that there's a camera probably that released in the last 2 or 3 years that it can't record in 4K. It doesn't have a 4K mode. And even then, that's another thing. We get caught up in these numbers, 4K, 8K. There's a fucking 12K camera out made by Blackmagic that it's like a dream. Again, see gear acquisition syndrome. But most content consumption, people are doing on their phones. Most people who watch YouTube on their phones are only watching in 720p, maybe 1080, maybe 1080. So your phone is a good enough place to start. And by that, I mean, start recording that video on your phone. Even if it's just like I started with a webcam, not even my phone. I didn't even think to use my phone. And then record that video with that, even if it's just snippets at first. Learn to edit it. Take the time out to learn the process of video content creation. Master that. And then think, okay, how would a professional camera or it doesn't even have to be a professional, it can be a consumer level mirrorless camera. How can that streamline or help my process? You can live stream. A lot of the phones you can live stream too. Like, and when I say use your phone, the back camera, not the front camera, the back cameras. Like you will be surprised how many creatives I have that have asked me about video. And I said, well, hey, have you tried your phone? And they naturally go to using their front camera because they can see themselves. Instead of turning it around, the better cameras on your phone are always going to be on the back. Sorry, that's a little side tangent. I didn't mean to get on a high horse there. But start off with the gear that you already have. I've said it before that there is a podcaster who recorded a video that they actually use the mic from their phone as the mic for their podcast. Now, they put it on boom arm. They get it as close to their mouth as possible. And it sounds amazing. So a lot of the time, and I know I used to be one of those people who frowned on using like phones and stuff because I thought the gear is what makes you. And this is a growth thing that I've had as well. To start with, what you already have, start with the tools that are available, start in if you're going to invest in gear and gear that isn't breaking your bank that you can. If you can only spend $15 on a mic, research and look the best $15 mic that you can buy for that price and then use that, whether it be USB, XLR, or whatever else. And then learn the craft. Actually take the time out to learn these things. I know content creation is fun. Being able to just sit down in front of a mic, add some intro or outro and upload it is fine. But if you really take the time out, and this is why I like something like Anchor, I could never use. I think my podcast is listed on Anchor just as another place to listen, but I can never use it as a recording and editing suite for me because it doesn't allow you to do the EQ. It doesn't allow you to use like the same thing that is the easy thing about uploading to Anchor sometimes harpens us to think that we have to get better gear because we didn't learn the tools. Take the time out. If this is something you're truly passionate about, like, and this is not a knock on the people who just want to record, upload, and go the fuck on about their business. If that's you, more power to you. But I'm specifically the people who just want to throw gear and want to do this professionally, actually take the time out to learn it, learn the tricks of the trade, learn how to better edit, learn how to better EQ, learn how to get the most out of what you already have before you go into something else. I have personally made the commitment to not purchasing any more gear for 2 years, unless something I have malfunctions or it's needed for a specific job. And that goes back to like the light thing, or if there's an overhead fixture or something that I need for that a client wants and is requesting and I don't own, then I'm going to provide that for the client. But as far as like cameras, as far as like new mics, whatever, unless something I have goes out or no longer functions, I'm making the choice to not invest in any more gear for the foreseeable future, because I know there are things that I still can learn about audio editing. There's still things that I can learn about video editing. There's still things that I can learn about whatever. Whereas throwing new gear at it isn't going to help me if I don't take the time out to learn that thing, especially because, as you guys know, I'm doing this professionally. I want to continue to do it professionally. I want this to be my main source of income by the end of 2022. So that's the goals that I'm setting. And so that's where I am. Let me know, for the creatives that are listening, how's gear acquisition syndrome affected you? For the people who aren't necessarily creatives, right? That sometimes, just as consumers, we feel like we have to stay on top of the latest and greatest, and it doesn't really help in the long run. It's not really adding very much to what we have to spend on it. And also for other creators with gear acquisition syndrome, make sure if you do feel something is a marketable upgrade for you or a noticeable upgrade for you, sell your old gear to kind of eat some of that price. I have totes and totes full of shit. Like, I went through my shit the other day and I put some stuff up for sale on Twitter that people saw. But I have, for example, like, I can literally do three different, keep in mind, I have two separate recording stations set up in my studio right now. One that the Awakened Souls run from, and then one that the new stuff that I do with the video channel is going to be run on the other side. I have two completely different recording setups, full audio, video, computers, everything, two completely different stations in my studio. I can make three more stations based off the gear that I have that's just in storage. So I'll probably be selling a little bit more to it, just holding on to it. But gear acquisition syndrome, let me know how it affects you, if it has affected you. I'm Hayes. This has been the Awakened Soul Podcast. You can follow us at Awakened Soul Pod. You can send us any feedback, questions, comments, concerns, theawakenedsoulpod@gmail.com. You can also send us a voicemail, 614-547-2039. Yeah, that's the right number. We are the number one podcast for the culture, and this week, we're out. Peace. I've been taking myself ever since the age of 9. Selling candy for school, but I pocket every dime. Elementary was simply the method of path you for forward progression, but now I'm older. It seemed like I forgot every lesson. Got my family on my back like with a bread at. Motherfuckers on my team like with your head at. Doing slimy shit to make it with the feds at. I got stuck with all the cheese, I never fed the rats. Gotta pick my friends better, cause they pose to lift me up. I shouldn't think about you first, or somebody would set me up.